body player
bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power. Bringing voices to power.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the Child Support Hustle Show. We haven't had our guests call in or the coach to call in, but I want to. We still do this. Still can have this discussion. This episode of Child Support Hustle Show, we were to talk with Matthew Kemp. He is a non-custodial parent from Marion, Ohio, and in 2007, his assumed son was born by his girlfriend. So Matthew thought, by all accounts, that this was his child, so he signed the birth certificate. But after 6 months into the relationship, Matthew discovered the child was not his child. After the couple broke up, child support was filed against Mr. Kemp for a child that is not his. After multiple times of being dragged to court, Mr. Kemp's ex has admitted in open court the child was not his. As of now, Champ is married with four children, and he is the only breadwinner in his family. He has the hardship of paying child support for a child that is not his. Him and his family has been homeless multiple times. And if he found, and if he is found in contempt of court for non-payment of child support, his family will face being homeless yet again. So, but I would say that, tell his story. That's what was supposed to be on the show today. But we still can talk about this, and we may call in. But a lot of people don't know is that a surprising number of men end up paying child support for a child that is not their own. And it seems like the basic rationale for this result to come about is that the laws that revolve around child support are more focused on ensuring that the child grows up with the support of an identified father, or that the state is relieved of providing financial support for a child. Let's think about that for a moment. Let me almost say it one more time. That the basic rationale for this type of result involving Mr. Kemp and people like Cornell Alexander, who's also been on the child support show and who is out there fighting, you know, for right and for justice. But the basic rationale for all of these results that are happening to people like Mr. Kemp and Cornell Alexander, laws that revolve around child support, they're more focused on ensuring that the child grows up with the support of an identified father, or the state is relieved of providing financial support for a child. The state don't pay, and if they make someone pay, they're going to make them pay what's going to financially benefit. So that's what we must think about when we talk about these child support laws. And right now, I want to take a break. I'm going to give you some information. And this information is from a lady who once worked for the child support industry. I would say industry because it is an industry. She was an insider, and she worked for the child support unit. And then she saw how bad it was, how it was doing people, destroying families and destroying lives. She saw all this happen, so she came out, and she's like a whistleblower. I'm going to listen to Terry Rhodes, and we'll be back on the other side of the break and tell you about the child hustle and what we're trying to do here. So listen to Carol Rhodes as we think, how can we end up paying child support when the child's not there?
Of the children and families. It's a pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you Ms. Carol Rhodes.
Thank you. My purpose today is not to dazzle you with my oratorical brilliance and skills. I merely want to say that I came to the 37th Circuit Family Court to make a difference. I was well qualified and hoped to be able to help Michigan families of divorce and separation, but early on I realized that the system was not designed to be child-friendly. No friendship nor honest conciliation were ever allowed in the family justice system between caseworkers and clients. It was all about money. How to get the federal and state tax dollars that were allotted each case for enforcement. In fact, our director would say regularly, we aren't the friend of the family, we're the friend of the court. We stumbled over ourselves trying to get more Title IV-D cases on our records and to increase the child support orders because the federal government granted huge allotments for each case we enforced. In the years I worked in the system, I witnessed regular deception to clients that was mandated by office policy. I saw gender bias and discrimination. I saw records destroyed. I saw office policies and rules change from week to week for the profit of the agency. I saw hundreds of pleas for parenting time or enforcement get buried because there is no money in enforcing custody or visitation issues. Increasing the child support money that came into our offices was the goal for each of us. We were rated according to how much money we brought in through asset seizures, income garnishment, court hearings, warrant issue. We wrote the orders and then we enforced them. The judge merely rubber stamped our efforts. My director proudly told me that the Child Support Enforcement Agency was the darling of the circuit court and that we actually made money for the judge and the court. Unlike the sheriff's department and so many others, our county or state was not an exception to the rule. We were one of the most successful counties and we shared training with other counties and states so they could learn how to maximize their efforts toward increased collection. We were not only told to withhold information, forms, policies, laws, and statutes from our clients with questions, but we were forbidden to help them obtain legal relief from unfair situations beyond their control. We were instructed to quickly help those who were demanding increases in child support, but we were threatened with losing our jobs if we should breathe a word to encourage an injured or unemployed payer to petition for a reduction of any kind. For the years that I worked in the system, I put my job on the line whenever I helped any of the parties in trouble. We were not to get personally involved. The children or parents, we had nothing to do with that. I was derisively accused of wasting my time being a social worker. We worked closely with Child Protective Services and Family Independence Agencies, and they were the same way. No one wanted to improve services or hear about abuses within the system because every worker in these huge bureaucracies was trying to keep his or her job by covering up any errors or problems. I had six secretaries underneath me, unlimited power in my 401k and my office to lose if I should rock the boat. But rock the boat I did when I wrote the book Friend of the Court, Enemy of the Family. Families that were bleeding from the pain of divorce and separation were insulted, tricked, lied to, and deceived by persons without adequate training to be making those kind of judgment calls. Most of the custody determinations were made by unwed, childless individuals who were totally unqualified to hold the lives of so many in their hands. The determinations were made on the basis of the most child support that could be ordered for each case.
Yeah.
Fathers or non-custodial parents were stereotyped as payers only. The court and most caseworkers felt that fathers were unnecessary and possibly dangerous for the children to have contact with. The child support system is an adversarial system. It encourages parental alienation and court battles. Children are pawns in an expensive and elaborate game of winner versus loser. Attorneys coming into the picture further divide the already fractured family and insulate the parents from communicating with each other. Usually after attorneys and agencies become involved, new and creative charges of abuse, neglect, and addiction enter the picture. Many times these are convenient charges against innocent family members guilty of parents even after the partner left. I heard many unwed fathers tell me that they begged the mothers of their children to marry them, but that the mothers were unwilling to give up the welfare check in exchange for a husband and father in the home. The most outdated picture of the father leaving the mom and kids to run off with his secretary is all but a thing of the past. In Southwest Michigan, 98% of the divorces are initiated by mothers and unwanted by the father. These aren't abusive fathers either. Equal parenting is not a men's issue. I was a single mother for most of my children's lives, and I know what children need most is the love and balance two fit parents can give them. Money can never make up for the loss of a parent. Divorce or separation should not be the reason some kids will never get to know one important part of themselves. Equal parenting does not do away with child support. Child support takes on a whole new dimension for children with two loving parents instead of just one. I am humble as I stand in the shadows of one of our greatest founding fathers. Here in this place, another great father, Martin Luther King, announced to the world that he had a dream. Well, Mahatma Gandhi told us that we must be the change that we want to see in the world. Are you willing to be that kind of change?
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson said that we only have the rights we're willing to fight for. Our Constitution gives all the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But for some children, the right to have two loving and involved parents in their lives has been usurped by the courts. Courts rule according to precedent, and the precedent has been biased against one parent in the past, branding him or her the non-custodial parent, which in itself is an insult. Equal parenting by two fit and willing parents is what our courts and agencies must go back to believing in. Laws and fiscal policies must not facilitate conflict and adversarial relationships between parents. It's only a matter of time before the civil rights of families will be restored in the courtrooms of our nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay, we're back. We just heard Carol Rhodes explain how system worked and what she saw when she was a part of that child support structure. She wrote a book, and I encourage people to go out and get her book, just like I encourage people to go out and get The Child Support Hustle by N.K. Clark, Miss Kenya Rockman. I encourage people to go out and get these because there's information in the book. Information that you can use, how you find out how to combat that is broken from the very beginning. Now, today's show, we're talking about someone being accused of being a father and they are not the parent. What we need to understand is that, like I said before the break, the reason why this happens is that the laws that revolve around child support, they're so crooked, they're so messed up. They are more focused on ensuring that the child grows up with the support of an identified father. See, they make that, they don't say an identified mother, they say an identified father. They want to identify you so that they will be relieved of providing financial support of the child. And how this can happen when you're not the father is that, the husband. Let's just talk about children born during a marriage. Okay, the husband is presumed to be the father of a child born during or after his marriage to the mother. And in some states, there is an irrefutable presumption of paternity. So we got to deal with that. Got to deal with that in some states, and everybody needs to find out their particular state, but in some states, there is an irrefutable presumption of paternity. And this means that if a child is born during marriage, you will be the father, even if DNA later says otherwise. You know, DNA later can say that you are not the father. But to the court system, it doesn't matter because you will be deemed the father. Like I said, even if the DNA later says that you are not. Okay, other states do allow you to rebut or challenge paternity if you comply with the strict time limit to challenge paternity. See, and that's another thing about the law. Like I said, the states do allow you to rebut or paternity if you comply within strict time limits to challenge the paternity. Okay, what is strict time limits? There should be no time limit. This person could have fooled me for 20 years. Who knows? She could have fooled me for all those years, and then finally the truth comes out. So why put a time limit on the truth? That's something that's really, really fucked up, really, about the system. Some states will restrict time limits on the challenge of paternity. You'd be able to challenge that at any time. Someone could have been cheating on you all this time. And even if you file 20 years, you can get a divorce, you can win a divorce because you revealed information and truth about the child or whatever it was. So why in child support put a time limit on it? So if your father or a non-custodial mother, if you don't prove real fast when there's time, whether it be a wrong to you or not, that's just too bad. It's too late. Okay. But if consent to your divorce being finalized, think about this. If you consent to your divorce being finalized without consenting paternity, you will forever be deemed a father. So a lot of people don't know that. They have to consent in your divorce being finalized without consenting paternity, you will forever be deemed a father. So if you go into a divorce, you do not need paternity. You need to test that paternity. I don't care if you do look at it, you raise them, all of this and all of that. You still could care about the person. But if this is a smart move, this is a move to, it's you finalize unfinished business. So if you get into the divorce, you should try to the paternity test. You don't know. You need to find out the truth for your exit. You later, it wasn't going to be the child anyway. There's nothing you can do. Why go through all of that? If you're finalizing everything, all your own business, and you need to, if you're getting a divorce before it gets finalized, don't let it get finalized without testing the paternity. Put that in the court decree. I don't care what it is. Put it in there. We need to, before we finalize this thing, we're going to do paternity testing, and we'll both pay for it or however it happens. But you, because if you don't and you find out later, it doesn't matter, because you will forever be deemed as the father. Okay, this presumption cannot be rebutted. That's how dangerous it is and how serious it is. You know, you should. Cannot be rebutted if you didn't have reason to believe the child was not yours. That's what I mean about the whole business. If you're getting divorced, you're going to exit the way out. So you might as well get these things out there and get the truth out of the matter, because it can't be rebutted. It was there every day. You know where it was. This, if you're getting divorced, do this for the sake of truth, for the sake of transparency, and for the sake of your future and some heartbreak, to not only to yourself, maybe paying for a child that is not yours, but also so that the child is not robbed of finding out who their real, you know, paternal parent is. So you need to clean all that business up from the marriage, because like I said, it cannot be rebutted, even if you didn't have a reason at the time that the child, to believe that the child is not yours, okay? Because once a judgment order decrees that you are the father of a child, challenging the judgment with appeal or motion, even on grounds like fraud, is very time sensitive and very difficult. Why do you think they put a time limit on the fault of the court? Stop putting a time limit on people finding out this very thing that could actually kill a person, have a heart attack and die, go insane, go mad. So the court is putting the best way to avoid any of that stress on people is for the courts to fix that and not put no damn time limit on finding out the truth. Because, like I said, once a judgment or order decrees that the person is the father of a child, challenging that judgment with some type of appeal or some type of motion, even on the ground like fraud, paternity fraud, like what could be going on in the case of Mr. Kemp that was supposed to be on here today, and also in the case of Cornell Alexander up in Detroit, you know. That's paternity fraud. What happened with Cornell is somebody pulled a paternity fraud on him. He's having to pay for a child that isn't his, and went through all this emotional and court costs and financial thing, all because of this fraud that happened upon him. And the state, they don't care. They care. So what I'm going to do here next is I'm going to try to reach out and call someone and see if we're going to call someone live from the radio, from the show. They called in earlier and had a drop call, but I'm going to see if I'm going to give something else. We got a whole lot of information I want to give everybody tonight and today, and we're just going to see if this person is ready to talk. Okay, we didn't get that call. So maybe they will call in a little bit later. Me. Hey, they said it's cheaper to keep her. They said it's cheaper to keep her. But a lot of things that we were talking about, like people having to pay for a child that is not theirs, the system is very dangerous. That's why the child support hustle movement started, was to point out these inequities in the system. So what we got to do. Keep an eye on these laws. Keep visiting pages like Child Support Hustle page on Facebook. You can use Facebook. What we do here is to give people information. But right now, I want to talk about having children born during a marriage. We just talked about that. Child can also be meant to pay for a child that is not is that you have a child when during the marriage. It's not saying that even the child, the woman could cheat and the child belongs to somebody else, but they're still considered yours under the law if the child was born during that marriage. So the next thing I want to talk about, when I'm talking about how you end up paying for a child that is not yours, I talked about, what happened to Carnell, what happened to Miss Kemp, and how it was paternity fraud, basically, and was ever punished for it. So we just talked about children born during a marriage. Now I want to talk about the children that were born for a marriage and how you could end up paying child support for a child that is not yours. So what I say that to say this, that some states impose a function of paternity on punitive fathers. I mean, this applies when a child is born before the marriage. So See, it gets punitive, folks. Trying to be a father, thinking you're a father, acting like the father. Even if you're not the father, it can be punitive. Because I just stated that some states impose a presumption of paternity on punitive fathers. Besides, when a child is born before the marriage, after birth, you agree either to have your name on the birth certificate to support the child or to support the child, or you welcome the child into you. Openly tell people the child is your own. Think about that, folks. This is another way that you end up in child support when the child is not your own. Because after birth, you agree to either have your name on the birth certificate or to support the child, or you become the, or you welcome the child into your home and openly tell other people the child is your own. Essentially, if you tell everyone you are the father, then the courts will agree. I know several men and several people, you know, for whatever reason, a lot of times it was in good order. Let's just hold on 1 second. We got a caller. Okay, this is Miss Rockman on the phone right now.
Hi, Marcus, how are you?
I'm doing good. I was here talking about, we was going to have Mr. Kim today. He's talking for me a subject that I know you have dealt with a long time with people about when it comes to paying for a child when the child is not yours. So I talked about, you know, what went on with Carnell and what's going on with Mr. Kemp. So I was just telling the people some of the ways and some of the reasons, you know, by the court standards, how a person could have to pay for a child when the child is not theirs. And I talked about children born during a marriage, you know, and how when you get a divorce that you have got to challenge that and do paternity, because if you find out later, it's not going to matter. And I'll talk about children.
Marcus, you're going in and out a little bit.
No, I was
going in
about
and out children. A little bit.
Oh, okay. I was talking about children born before marriage. You know, and I was talking about how some states impose a presumption of paternity on punitive fathers, you know, and I was talking about how this applies when, you know, a child is born before the marriage and after birth, you either have a name on the birth certificate to support the child, or you welcome the child into your home and only tell people the child is yours. You know, that's a reason.
You're breaking
you know,
up really bad, Marcus. We can't understand you. You're breaking up really bad.
No one can hear me. Yeah, I'm hearing about it. You're very clear. You know, it could be a phone issue, and we arms here, so got that going on. How's that?
Yeah, maybe it's my phone.
Is this a little bit better?
Maybe it was my
okay,
connection.
Yeah. Okay, I was talking about how you could end up paying for a child that's not yours, and I was talking about children that were born before the marriage, and I was just saying that you bring a lady into your home and a child in your home, and you openly tell other people the child is your own. I know I heard people say that. They get with a person, and everybody knows the child's not theirs, but they say, hey, that's my child. You know, because you love the person, you're with the person, you're going to treat them like your child, you make sure they eat, that they're clothed, and everything else. But just by doing that, welcoming the child into your home and openly telling other people the child is your own, you tell everyone that you are the father, and the courts will agree. If you're out there telling people, hey, that's my child, and you know it's really not your child, the court of law is your child, because you have openly told people that the child is your own. And some states do allow you to contest that if it's just that, or, you know, or challenge. But this is a presumption as well, you know. And just like all these other things I mentioned, there is a time window in which you must challenge. The presumption is usually very strict. Now, can you talk about the court implying the strict time limits for you to get the truth?
In most states, it's 2 years, and that's the 2 years that you can challenge the paternity. Other than that, you're on the after those 2 years. Some states it's three. Some very rarely is it longer than two. Some states it's even shorter. It's like 6 months. I don't have the exact states in front of me. And after the time elapses, it's almost impossible to have that paternity rescinded. So if you have any doubt that that child is not yours, and you're on the birth certificate, or you're claiming that child as your own, don't wait until that time elapses, because it is very difficult to rescind paternity.
You nailed it. You nailed it when you said that, because, you know, that's the bottom line. The bottom line is that the longer you wait to have paternity, the harder it will be to overturn the finding of paternity. You know, because, of course...
And another thing, Mark, is you don't even have to be there. They have a court, they hold court, and you're found to be a dad in default, which means that you didn't show up to court, and they just ordered you to be the father just because you weren't there, and they put you on the child support order. You are therefore the father by default. So the same rules apply. If you don't challenge that paternity in that allotted time, whatever the state allows, then you are legally the father. So you are on the hook for that child support amount until the child reaches the age of majority. And then if you owe arrears, of course, that can go on for your whole lifetime.
Right. But see, that's what people that are, you know, understand, come to grips with, is because laws in this land, the United States, and in all states, they favor someone being named a father, because they do not want a child going through life fatherless. That's what they, you know, that's the cover story, I guess. But the equitable doctrine of estoppel applies to persons who have, for all practical purposes, considered to be a dad, you know what I'm saying, regardless of paternity. So if you know not that child's father, don't be running around his head. I know you might love a woman, you might love a child, you take care of them, but later on that relationship breaks down or something happens, and you've been running around claiming man, you're the father, then, you know, you'll be in some trouble. Because the basic theory is that since you acted like a parent and permitted the child to believe you was the father, the child now has a right to rely on you, your representation, and that you are father. So if you tell the child this, and you tell this woman this, and you tell the community this, and you know that that's not true, that you are legally liable for that child. And the reason for that is that the child should not be penalized by your later withdrawal consent, you know, to be dad. You can't just jump and say, well, dad, be your dad, and call your stepchild daddy and withdraw it. The courts don't look good on that. You know, and once the court makes that determination, you're on the hook. You are on the hook for future support obligations, because they come. They come. So just watch what you say. Be real, you know, and just... don't leave anybody on like that, because I'd imagine there's a lot of psychological stuff that could happen as well. Okay, now, Kenya, can you tell people how to get in touch? They want to know more information, and how they can help the movement, because what we're out here doing is just spread information so people can know how to act, and they can know how to move accordingly. Okay, she's not on right now, but I just want to go back to this. And Yeah, you got to go. We're glad you called, dropped in, get some more information on here. We're doing what we do, you know. I was going to the people that you was about to see how they get the Child Support Hustle movement, how they can get to get more information, and what we got on the table next.
Yes. You can contact the Child Support Hustle by DM, our Facebook page, or send us a client contact form at thechildsupporthustle.com. You can also call us and leave a message at 614-344-1669, or you can send an email, cfhustle1@gmail.com. The difference is right now, if we do a consultation or prepare a complaint for you, we are asking for a donation of $25 or $50, but we will not turn anyone away if you need our help. But, you know, we need money to fight this machine, the child support machine. So that's why we're kind of changing up how we are handling the fight. So you can also buy the book, packed full of information.
I just want to let let the people know they can help us by order a shirt, wear a shirt for us, the Child Support Hustle.
Right.
Yeah.
If you can buy the book too, all that is available on the website.
And the Twitter.
Oh, yeah, on Twitter, we're at CS Hustle, the number one. We're on Instagram at KN or NK. And I think that is all of our social media sites. And, yeah, definitely follow us on Facebook.
Right. Got that Facebook page jumping right now, y'all. We're 50,000 strong. Got a lot of input from members. We don't always agree. We just put the information out there to spark the conversation and keep the conversation going. But if y'all don't know, Kenya Rockman is the author of The Child Support Hustle. And when you go to look for that book, don't get no confusion. Kenya Rockman's pen name is N.K. Clark. So if you see The Child Support Hustle book, the N.K. Clark or Kenya Rockman, that is right book. And of the Reform Child Support Now movement. You know, Kenya began her writing career in 2007. You know, she specializes in child support guidelines. So she is a reliable source. And Kenya is a veteran of the U.S. Army. You know, she earned an associate degree in small business management from Columbus State Community College. She's got a bachelor's degree, a master's degree in business administration. So she does know what she's talking about. Like I tell Kenya all the time, you wrote the book, you know. So put that knowledge out there, you know, in different lives. Or, you know, Kenya's a member on the board of advisors of the documentary, you know, Erasing Faith, you know, directed by Ginger Gentile. You know, she's also the co-host on the Child Support Red Show with me and other friends. A lot more people. We talk to a lot of people, you know. And we have Dale, and she has dealt, you know, in the political field. She knows how to them, you know. She's a member of the press, certified member of the press, and written, you know, to the Paternity Act bill, which was introduced by former Michigan State Representative Ronstadt. And so we cross styles. We don't look at politics when we're trying to address this issue. You know, way back in 2016, she was working and reaching out on the other side of the aisle to try to get the problems that everybody's been facing taken care of. And she's also authored several articles, which along with the Child Support Hustle, and she has been cited in numerous published writings. These writings include the book Bullied to Death, Chris Mackey, and that divorce, we all know what happened to Chris Mackey, you know, very sad thing that happened with him during his divorce, you know, and that was written by Michael Volpe, You know, she has been, and Kenya also has been a member of several panels discussing child support issues, and she produces videos explaining child support situations in order to assist, you know, non-custodial parents with their child support cases. You know, and currently, you know, the child support team is working on presenting legislation to politicians in every state. We're going to be holding more town halls already up and down the East Coast, all through the South. We're going to get to the West and the Upper West as well. And she talked about, and she addresses the use of debtor prisons for punishment against low-income poor parents, you know, allegedly on child support debt, you know, that they cannot afford to pay. So it's good that they die, you know, and she plans on continuing, you know, her fight child support reform and for the abolition of debtors' prisons. We should have gotten rid of that a long time ago, you know. So join us on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and all the social media pages. We are giving out information, and we're going to keep the fight on. So I'm going to play this two-part to end the show. I'm going to play this two-part series that was done by a former person that was with the Fed, and they are a scholar out of the University of Southern California. And these are former Fed people who address the issue of child support and how it's calculated, because the experts all agree that the child support is being calculated in a very wrongful and punishing way. And we're going to talk about the breakthrough study that these people done to talk about and address child support. I'll be back right after the first.
Hi, I'm Joe Sorge, and I'd like to tell you about a breakthrough study coming out of the University of California that reveals some shocking facts related to our child support system. We all know that divorce is contentious, but why the long, drawn-out battles over custody? These battles pit one parent against the other and put the children in the middle. In most cases, both parents want to see their children, and except under rare circumstances, do the children not want to see both parents. So what if the parents simply share the children? Well, you guessed it, money. If child support levels are set too low, the children may not get proper housing or food or clothing. But if child support levels are set too high, the payer may not be able to afford the payments. And under our current system, if a payer falls behind on payments, a warrant may be issued for their arrest. And if they're arrested, their driver's licenses are taken away and they're put in jail, where they can't work and make money to catch up on their payments. So it's a vicious cycle and nobody wins. We believe that this University of California study reveals for the first time the true costs of raising children and uncovers damning evidence that our current child support calculations unnecessarily fuel custody battles. So we sat down with the brilliant economist, Dr. William Komonor, the main author of this study. He's professor of economics at the University of California and once served as the chief economist of the Federal Trade Commission in Washington, D.C. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to do this.
I'm delighted.
So if it costs $500 a month to raise a child in the state of Alabama, does every parent pay $500 a month?
No, the state can set different amounts for wealthier parents than poorer parents. Can set different amounts if there's two children or three children as opposed to one child in the household. So the states have lots of flexibility. But however they do it, they must pay attention to available data on the economic cost of raising children.
Can an economist determine what it costs to raise a child?
Yes. Suppose you have two households with pretty much the same income levels and the same general standards of living. And one of these households might have one child and another household might be childless. And then one can compare the household with a child with the household without the child and try to examine with available data, did the household with the child spend more on housing, more on food, more on clothing, more on child care and education, more on other different elements of expenditures. Suppose it's true that a household is composed of husband and a wife and no children. And they live in a two-bedroom apartment. And they use the second bedroom as a den. Now, suppose a child arrives and the den is transformed into a nursery. Let's compare the two circumstances. Well, given my hypothetical example, notice there is no change in housing costs. They spent the same amount on rent when the child arrives as they spent originally. They stay in the same unit. For the most part, your child lives in your household and, you know, consumes the same collection of goods that you consume.
Do people that have their first child spend more on food?
Generally, no. They spend the same amount on food despite the presence of the first child than they spent earlier.
If you have another mouth eating, how could you possibly not spend more on food?
You probably throw away less. Suppose it was true before the presence of children, you would eat out a lot. And we all know that food in restaurants is expensive. And when the child arrives, you eat at home more. So there may be some redistribution within the categories. I don't doubt that. But your total outlays, you know, don't appear to be that much different in the presence of a child than before.
Dr. Kommener's approach measures what is typically called marginal cost increases. For example, an automobile does not burn much more gasoline with two people sitting in it than it does with just one person sitting in it. The cost of the extra fuel consumed would be called the marginal cost of adding a second passenger. If we dig into the details of Dr. Kommener's publication, we find that the increase in food expense is, in fact, very low when children are young. But as the children age, food costs go up significantly. This might lead one to believe that child support amounts should be increased as the children age. However, Dr. Kommener's data also reveal a counterbalancing trend. Parents spend less on child care services as the children age. While these two factors do not offset each other exactly, and the results vary somewhat in different economic brackets, total marginal expenses do not change substantially as children get older. How many households did you study?
We looked at over 16,000 households to do these comparisons.
Your control group had no children?
That is correct.
And then the group that you were measuring the increase in expenditures had one, two, three, or more children?
We did it in three different circumstances, with one child, with two children, and with three children.
I asked Dr. Kommener if others had published on this topic before he and his co-authors did. He said yes, there are two other published methods, but neither looks at out-of-pocket marginal costs.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture annually publishes a report on the cost of raising children. And what's striking is that they use the same data that I use. We all use the same data.
But he said that the USDA method is flawed because it simply takes certain expenditure categories and divides those costs by the number of individuals in the family, including the children. This is called the average costs method as opposed to the out-of-pocket marginal costs method. I asked him to give us an example of why his method comes up with a more realistic measure of transportation costs than the USDA method.
The household had two cars before the arrival of children and now has two cars still. And for the most part, they spend the same amount of money on cars and gasoline and all of that stuff. And the cars had a back seat before, which wasn't generally used. And now it's used with the child. So there's essentially no additional transportation costs. The real transportation cost is the cost of the car seat.
He went on to explain that the USDA method is also flawed with respect to housing costs.
They said that the housing cost of the child is the cost of an additional bedroom. So if originally you had a two-bedroom apartment, one used for the den, then the housing cost would be the hypothetical rental cost of a three-bedroom apartment where you could keep your den even if that was never used. So again, that was a fiction.
We then talked about a second competing method for studying the costs of raising children, called the income equivalence, or IE method. The IE method is used by a private consulting firm that advises many of the states regarding child support levels.
They measure the welfare of a household in terms of the proportion spent on alternatively food or
professor as a former, you know, employee of the Fed, talk about how child support is calculated. Is it calculated wrong? Not only in the laws of you may have to pay for a child that is not on, you also have all of that run against you. You also have the calculation going against you. And that's what you have to deal with when you're doing this. And just remember, everybody out there, since the subject today was paying for a child that's not yours, every state approaches parental assumptions slightly differently. You know, but the bottom line is that the longer you wait to challenge that paternity, the harder it will be to overturn the finding of paternity. Because these courts, I'm telling y'all, these courts, the way they are designed, they consistently hold presumed fathers to strict timelines. So you're not going to get a second chance at this. You're not going to be able to just get yourself out of this. You would think that, hey, we know this child is not mine. All this child support and all this locking me up, all of this should just go away because everyone knows it's not mine. It doesn't work that way in this system in America, because it's a system making big bucks for the politicians and local governments and paying a lot of people's retirement for 401ks and all this other type of stuff that they're doing. So don't look for them to fix this. We have to keep speaking out about it. So I'm going to end the show with part two of this breakthrough study. They're talking about even the way that child support is calculated is on false figures. Like they talk about impugn and all these different types of terms. Well, someone can define how much. But listen to this expert in this breakthrough study, part two. They are talking about how the calculations for child support is just simply wrong. It's done totally wrong, and it just really exposes the system as a hustle. Hence the show, The Child Support Hustle. Check it out next week.
Adult clothing. And then it tries to ask whether or not, in the presence of the child, you spent less on adult clothing or food than you did otherwise.
Sound complicated? Well, that's because it is. Let us try to explain the convoluted approach taken by the IE method.
The IE method assumes that fewer dollars are spent on adult food and adult clothing so that money could be made available for the needs of the children. The method then assumes that a similar shifting of expenses will occur in other cost categories as well, such as for transportation and housing costs. But the IE method does not measure those shifting expenses directly. Instead, it makes the questionable assumption that parents will give up the same proportion or percentage of their income in other expense categories as they did for adult food and clothing. So it multiplies that same percentage times the family's other expenses to compute a synthetic amount. It then assumes that a custodial parent would need this synthetic amount in order to raise children under a lifestyle that also affords that custodial parent all the things they enjoyed prior to having children.
They're trying to assign a value to keeping the old lifestyle, even though you're living with a child and you don't follow the old lifestyle.
You may not even want the old lifestyle.
And you may not even want, that's exactly right, you may not even want the old lifestyle, but that's not taken into account in these other methods. It's a bizarre approach, I believe.
I asked Dr. Komenor for some examples of what types of hypothetical reductions in the standard of living might be computed in the IE method's synthetic amount.
Food costs are largely, or often, restaurant meals out. And some people want to have very high fashion clothing and some do not. We all know that once you have a child, your whole life changes and you have focus on your children in a way that you never did before. But the methodology used in this IE method ignores that reality.
Does the IE method measure the value to parents of having a child?
No, it doesn't.
I've read that some of these IE methods actually measure the amount of tobacco and alcohol consumed by the adults.
Yes, they do. Isn't that bizarre? And yet, that approach is the dominant approach today, used today, by which child support guideline amounts are determined.
Why?
The reason is because when the states got into this business back in the 1980s, there was no data on the child expenditures. There were data on household expenditures. And so they needed to find a way to go from available data for the household to that which it applies to the child.
Did the IE method look at single parents with children?
No, they did not. They only looked at married households.
What about the USDA method? Did they look at single parents?
Yes, they did. They did look at single parents as well as married parents.
And did you look at single parents?
Yes, I did.
Because one could argue that the single parent with a child is the more relevant economic situation than the married or the couple with or without children.
That's exactly right. The costs of raising a child or children in a single-headed household are slightly greater on average than those in a married household.
You're basically saying that people spend less on children than these other methods estimate they spend on children.
Yes, substantially less. And the reason is because our method is limited to out-of-pocket expenditures. You know, direct
money.
Real money. What the other methods do is attribute expenditures to children which are not made out of pocket. It's a fiction.
Well, let's take a look at the costs estimated by the IE and USDA methods and compare them to the costs measured by Dr. Komenor's method. For married households, the IE method overestimated the cost of raising a child by about 200%, and the USDA method overestimated the cost by roughly 300%. The overestimates were even more extreme for single-parent households. While the IE method did not even look at single-parent households, the USDA method overestimated expenses by over 300% for low-income households and over 400% for mid- to high-income households. These overestimates have been misleading the states into setting child support awards that are too high, by somewhere between $400 and $800 per month per child. Over the course of a child's dependency, that could amount to nearly $100,000 per child of unsupported costs for low-income families and nearly $200,000 per child of unsupported costs for middle-income families. This begs the question of whether the $120 billion of unpaid child support in the United States today is due to parents' unwillingness to make child support payments, or are the amounts so high that they cannot afford to make them? Essentially, there is a profit in being a custodial parent.
That's exactly right. That's what the current child support system does.
Do you think that this profit factor that exists in the guidelines now can cause non-optimal behavior?
For the child support system to work effectively, it must have the agreement of both parents, not only the recipient, but the payer. And the payers recognize that the amount of money that they are obligated to pay exceeds actual expenditures on the child, they know that. They're not saying they live it. And so what the payers are funding is not merely the cost of raising their children, but also a financial asset which benefits the recipient. And of course, that creates discord between the parents. The payer objects, and the recipient feels entitled to it, which would not be true if the child support award amounts truly reflected the out-of-pocket costs of raising children.
And is there a venue where this discord gets played out?
In the courts. In divorce courts.
This is one of the most contentious areas of family law, and the unfortunate truth is that children are paying the price for a flawed system. If you would like to see your state review its child support guidelines, please contact your state legislators and let them know that children should not be used as pawns in an economic battle involving their parents and their lawyers. I hope that with your help, we can work toward reducing the conflicts inherent in our family court system. I'm Joe Sorge. Thank you for watching.
Bringing voices to power. Thank you. the grassroots mouthpiece. They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power. Bringing voices to power.